are live. Welcome to episode 25 of To the Unknown Pod. Runaway inflation in the Eighth Commandment. We'll get to that shortly. I am joined today. My name is Jordan Bush. I'm the executive director of TGFB Media, which exists to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. Today, I am joined by one third of the Island Boys. Ryan, go ahead and introduce yourself, and then we'll tell everybody where our derelict compatriots are.
Yeah, I'm Ryan Finley, entrepreneur, dad of six. I just recently spoke at the Bitcoin is for Everyone up in Portland. Low time preference parenting. That was a talk. And anyway, it was good to be here, Jordan.
It was a great talk. Yes, as we mentioned, Ryan, thank you for being here. Thank you for taking seriously your commitment. We've got some other guys who are like, I'm taking my daughter to college. And I'm going to visit my wife's family in Europe. Okay, like, again, what kind of excuses are these, really? I don't understand. But again, so we do want to announce that we're opening open casting calls to replace them. So Ash and Matt are nowhere to be found. So if you'd like to be considered, please send us your resume. And we'll be happy to consider them in a timely manner. Again, today, we're going to be talking about runaway inflation in the Eighth Commandment. What in the world do those things have to do with one another? Hopefully if you've been around these parts for a little bit, you know what those two things have in common. But we'll get to that. So Ryan, why in the world are we doing this episode? Why did you think this was your choice? So why did you think this was something that we ought to talk about?
Yeah. I mean, I think we had another CPI report that came out today. And again, I think the numbers came out, or the numbers are running a little hot still. And my base case is we're going to have to keep printing mounds of money, and inflation's going to be high from here on out. I don't think they're going to be able to stop the amount of money that they need to print. And, but the perniciousness of it, I would say the majority of people haven't thought deeply about it or understand how it works. And our government straight up lies to the people. Our presidents lie. They blame inflation on everything but its actual cause, which is our money being debased by the Federal Reserve, just endlessly printing it.
Yep.
And there's also, everything's obscure. So, you know, we're going to bring up some of the examples of how, you know, you at home can track inflation in some of the things you buy. But it's very, very destructive, and it impacts everything, and it's only going to get worse. Yeah, I think this is a really important talk.
Yeah, this is something where, again, there's lots of, well, maybe not lots, but there's a number of different understandings of what inflation is. Some people are, you know, would describe it as the increase in prices over time. Again, there is truth in that to a degree, but then another way to think about inflation is just the overall increase of units in the monetary system. So the increase in monetary units that are out there to be spent, as that number goes up, that is another sense in which inflation can be measured. And it's by far, in the day and age that we live, it's the one that's less understood and less emphasized. You're going to find this principle everywhere. Once you start looking for it, once you see it, is a lot of the explanations for things are very superficial. And the explanations and the solutions that people and governments and institutions are willing to discuss are these very superficial solutions that actually won't resolve any of the underlying causes for the situation that we find ourselves in. And so once you start looking for that, you start to see it everywhere. And so again, a lot of the things that we're going to talk about, just because the monetary base has grown very quickly through the issuance of new money as debt that then gets paid back. Basically, there is so much more currency units out there that it just increases necessarily the price of everything that can't be created as quickly as the currency units themselves. And since they're created literally instantaneously, most of them digitally, there is no time between when they're created or very little time between when they're created and when they, you know, their effect starts to be felt in the economy. So one of the things we're going to start doing, we have a ton. This is going to be a great little quick hitter. Find your tweets of just about inflation. So the first thing that we're going to do here is we're going to look at one of the most surprising but reliable ways to observe inflation is what, Ryan?
Ground beef.
Ground beef. Now, again, this might sound insane to you, but it is in fact true. So here we go. This some guy I found on Twitter, you know, we won't even mention. Let's just cut off that. Let's cut off his name there. In 2020, the Federal Reserve increased the U.S. dollar money supply by 42%. Since 2020, ground beef prices have gone up 45%. Ground beef is the most accurate picture of inflation we have. So when you see ground beef prices going up, respond accordingly. Buy Bitcoin. Ryan, I'll let you unpack that and anything else you want to mention.
I don't know if it was Lynn Alden who first mentioned it. She, I know that she's tweeted about it. I think we're going to share another tweet, but she called it like the Big Mac Index. And I was like, I thought it was such an incredible example. Anyways, she explains that it's very difficult to hide inflation in ground beef because it represents, I mean, there's so many different parts of our economy and so many inputs that go into ground beef. You got transportation, you got land, labor, oil, seed costs, like just butcher costs, like everything. There's just a ton of, so it's very difficult. And then at the end of the day, it's like how do you reduce? I mean, obviously there are some ways that they've reduced the quality of some beef. But I just go a step further and track the price of, you know, local grass fed ground beef, but you can do whatever you want. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still difficult to hide inflation in the price of beef. So,
yeah, this is something where, again, there are ways, and we're going to talk about one of them, which is shrinkflation. There's different ways to try to hide the true inflation that's going on. Here's a few different ways that you can handle inflation. So inflation just means that everything, the price of the goods themselves go up. And so then correspondingly, the price that, you know, these providers are having to charge in order to continue to make the margin that they need to in order to operate and remain profitable, they just basically pass that inflation rate along to their customers. And so this is where kind of the misunderstanding of, oh, you know, businesses are going to pay more. It's like that never is going to happen. With limited exception, that is not going to be the primary way that this thing goes down. If there is increases in costs, they're going to be passed along to the consumer. And so in this case, you can see, again, the monetary supply went up 42% and the ground beef supply went up even, or the cost of ground beef went up even more. Because again, there is just, you know, loss of, you know, there's other increases that go up. So your cost of fuel probably went up during this time period. Your cost of, you know, labor probably went up a little bit. And so all of those little things, it affect the end product. And so again, this isn't magic. Like, this is something that I really think is important. Like, prices aren't magic. They have everything to do with what's going on in the process of making something, the delivery of the product that's being made. But again, we mentioned one of the ways that you can hide some of this inflation, and that's to actually change the product itself. So for instance, you could have, like, let's say you're going to a grocery store and they're selling, let's say it's like in 90% ground beef, 90% meat. And then there's like some fat in there as well, which again, you want some fat, but let's say normally the store is selling 90% and you get accustomed, okay, to paying whatever it is, let's say $5 a pound or $6 a pound for ground beef. That's like that. One of the ways that customers recognize that businesses recognize that their customers don't like to see prices go up. And so one of the ways that they can try to avoid having to raise prices is by saying, all right, well, we're going to drop the quality of the meat from 90% to 85. And it'll still be listed there. It'll still show you right there. If you're paying attention, you'll notice. But a lot of people won't be paying attention. And so they'll just keep buying it and they'll see, oh, it's the same price. So it's, you know, that's good. In reality, it's something more subtle has happened. The product itself has changed and it's gotten worse in the name of keeping the price the same. And so this is, you mentioned Lynn. We have Lynn, here we go, mentioning, here's a chart of the U.S. Consumer Price Index. So the CPI is the short way to put that. U.S. broad money supply per capita and the Big Mac prices from 1990 to 2020 normalized to 100 in 1990. So you can see here, so CPI is blue. This is the Consumer Price Index, the official numbers, which are pretty much always wrong and lying right to your face in order to, you know, cover the government's rear end. That's the CPI. The broad money. So this is how much money the orange. Incredible they chose Bitcoin colors. Broad money per capita, and then the Big Mac price. So the Big Mac price is way above, significantly above. Is it double? Let's see, what is it? Not quite.
Yeah, there was another. Yeah. It's gone up an enormous. Yeah. I think it's gone up even. I want to say it was like, I saw one tweet. It was like 13 or 14% a year. Yeah, it's even.
Yeah. Yeah, so again, this was to 2020. So this is, again, another 5 years since then. So it's going to be much higher than this. And so, yeah.
Our astronaut update it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Ryan replied to her and asked her to update it. So that's another one. Again, there's 100 things. So follow Lynn Alden. Lynn Alden is a fantastic resource for inflation-related things. Parker Lewis, as it relates to meat, is another great person to follow. Parker's been following the meat, not at Kirkland. Fresh Market, I think, next to him. This actually isn't that example. So he's been following Fresh Market.
He's been yelling from the rooftops as well.
Yeah.
Because it's the easiest. So many of the price increases are obfuscated.
Yes.
In supermarkets because they shrink the packages. It's all sorts of they reduce the quality.
Yep.
Which again, it just hides it.
Yep.
The CPI, the basket's always changing. Again, you can't trust it at all. Every time it makes the numbers look bad, they just change the basket to, and then at the end of the day, inflation is stealing money from everyone. And that obviously, when the word gets out about that, people bring out the pitchforks. So politicians come out and they come up with 100 different scapegoats the greedy billionaires. It's the greedy grocery store owners, right? I mean, I think they have a 2% margin on their goods at a grocery store and with a straight face.
And this is something where I got an example of this. He's like, well, I mean, how can you really say that the CPI is lying? Well, here's an example. You can go back and you can look at the way that the CPI was calculated. And you can go through and read what things that they include. And one of the things that one of the things that they mentioned was initially the CPI, I think steak was actually on there. It was like a better cut of beef. And now they just do it with ground beef. And so they act like, so it's easier to disguise, even though they're like, oh, this is both beef technically. But it's a big difference between a steak and ground beef. And so to try to just draw an equivalence between those things in order to hide inflation is just wrong. It's just immoral. you're actually lying by doing that. So,
yeah.
But here's an example. This is just from the last 12 months, a little bit less than 12 months here. Or I guess a little bit more. So this, beef loin, New York steak, boneless USDA choice was 49. Okay. For about, almost the same weight. Was $49.24 a year ago. It's $78.03. I saw a beef tenderloin today at the grocery store, and I literally walked by it, saw the price, then walked back and assumed that I had misread it. Because it was a beef tenderloin. It was a good size one. I believe it was $119 or $120. Wow. It was something absurd where I was like, how is this possible? That this is this much. We just bought a quarter cow with some family of ours. We bought a quarter cow between three families. Okay. And I believe we spent $700 for that. So you're talking $8,500 for the whole cow. It's just bonkers. Like these numbers are just crazy. I remember a few years ago when a cow was like $2,500, an entire cow. And now we're at like four times that.
Yeah, it's nuts.
So that's Parker. Go follow him. Then we've got this one here. This is the McDouble, and not just the Big Mac index. Let's look at the McDouble index. Let's see if we can play this.
If you listen to an audio, McDouble went from 99 cents to $1.69 a few years later. 2018 is $1.45. All the way, you guys, 205. $2.19, $2.49. $16. $3. 319, 329.
Different times.
349.
What was the date on the last one?
I missed it. This one is this last one. You can't see the date, but it's 449, a McDouble. It's 350% in less. 479 in Boulder City, Nevada, as of 2023. It's over $5, or right at, yeah, but it looks like over $5 in 2023. So you're talking over, you know, basically 500% increase in the span of 10 years. This is, again, man, just so unsustainable. And again, it's something that's super tangible for a lot of people. You know, McDonald's has sold billions of hamburgers. But yeah, it is.
Yes.
Hits different when you see it like that.
Yeah. I just encourage people to pick an item. The one that I follow the most is there's an organic 15 pack of hamburger patties at Costco. And I want to say it was like 2018. So I guess it's been 7 years ago. But maybe it was closer to 2020, but it was, I remember paying 16, 18 bucks for that. There's like 15 patties in it. So, you know, it's about $1 a patty. It just hit $29.99. So you just keep watching it though. Like, yeah. So, I mean, if at the current pace, I bet, you know, within a year, it'll be 33, 34. And it's just going to keep 10% plus per year. Unless, you know, and obviously there's, I was talking to somebody earlier today, there's, you know, there are some supply,
yeah,
driven issues. It's not always 100% because sometimes it'll spike. It won't just be 10%. Like, it won't be just because of, the increase in the money supply. Sometimes with, you know, storms, feed, like we had a bad summer in the West, and there's less hay available, so feed's going to be more expensive, so that's going to increase beef prices even more than normal next year. So
yeah, but again, it's not the only factor, but it is an enormous factor. That's kind of what you're getting at. I meant to mention that earlier. So yeah, again, you're going to have the what about people who are always going to be, you're like, that doesn't tell the whole story. It's like, correct, we understand that. Like, but again, this is still, it's by far the biggest factor, especially over time. It's an enormous factor. Here we have another one from a not quite friend of the program, hopefully someday become friend of the program, Balaji. Shared this one on Campbell's Soup Index. Let's see. He calls this one the single best. This is the single best long-run measure of food inflation, and it's gone vertical. Look, man, forget Bitcoin. Look at the returns. If you're if you're investing in Campbell's Soup, baby. So you're looking at, now, again, the date on this is really interesting, when this started to go parabolic. Where did this happen? Oh, yeah, the 70s. Oh, What happened in the early 1970s?
What happened in 1971?
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, there's so many charts like this that just as soon as 1971 came around and we went off the gold standard for good, prices just went vertical. So,
I mean, the other thing you can see is like where, I mean, you see like interest rates. I mean, you see like basically through here, I mean, again, interest rates being low, you know, rate basically makes the price of everything go up. You can see, I mean, a lot of these things, just look at these gap ups during COVID, gap up here, as well. Again, this is just something where, so again, now it's over
$1.24.
You're talking 10 cents. This thing was for a long time. Look how it stayed steady.
Yeah.
This is what's so fascinating, right? When you have a stable, scarce currency, you do get price stability. Like, this is,
and the crazy thing is, I think we did. I mean, we were having monetary debasement during those years. It wasn't like we weren't having any.
Yeah,
it's just that there was way more restraint, and the amount of debasement was very low. So it was like, it was kind of like they were trying to boil everyone, like boiling a frog kind of level. Like, so you didn't really notice it because we should be having deflation. So the price of this Campbell's soup, if you have sound money, instead of 10 cents, it should go down, you know, it could go down to like 2 cents or something, like, because of innovation and coming up with like yeah, just new technology, it's going to keep driving the price down. But with low monetary debasement, it silently just took away all the gains from innovation. Yeah. And kind of kept the price somewhat steady. And again, it makes it the pernicious part about it is it made it kind of hard to see
it happen.
Then the gloves came off in 1971, yep. And then they really started ripping and printing enormous amounts of money.
It's staggering to think about. Like, look at this chart. Look at 1929. Okay, 1929, the Great Depression, one of the quote unquote worst, you know, financial events in, you know, recent U.S. or definitely U.S. history. Look at the price; it didn't even budge.
Yeah, went down. just a little bit.
Staggering, right? And again, this. Yeah. Like the underlying denominator for your nation, for your country, it matters immensely. And we have the average, you know, Christian, the average person has no conception of these things, and it matters a ton. A big part of why we're doing what we're doing is, you know, again, even independent of Bitcoin, like these are real problems basically the Christians will be facing, the church will be facing, people trying to minister will be facing, people trying to operate businesses and other, you know, nonprofit organizations are all going to have to deal with and reckon with these realities. There's no escaping them. And if you just stick your head in the ground or just get frustrated, get angry about them. Like, again, it's great to know about this and to be angry. Okay, great. But if you don't have some way to avoid getting eviscerated by them, it really doesn't do you any good to hear to understand these things, right?
And just to reinforce what we were just talking about, you know, so money supply went up 40. What was it? I'm trying to remember. It was from 2020 to 2025. It was money supply went up 46% or something like that. And ground beef basically went 40, up about the same amount.
Yeah, 42 to 45, I think.
Yeah. And so you're like, oh, well, then maybe that was just a one-off thing. It, like, again, the Campbell soup.
Yeah.
2020, the price was 84 cents.
Yeah.
Like, if you zoom in, you don't need to, but it was 84 cents. And now it's $1.24.
Yep.
So that's a 47% increase. Oh, what are the odds?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Again, it's hard to, like, it's just a Campbell's soup, the same size, little tin can. It's just tomatoes.
Yep.
It went up the same amount as the money was debased.
Well, in the
same as ground beef.
And the crazy thing is it's actually worse because again, the it's possible that the you know, like I would almost guarantee you that the material that the can is made out of is actually worse materials. I was out in Portland with you guys last week for the Bitcoin is for Everyone conference. And at the bar, I went over to the bar and as a, you know, good Christian does, I asked if they had any root beer. And I'm a sucker for like a good root beer. And so they said, oh yeah, we got root beer. This lady pulled out a can. It was a can of root beer. It was the best can I've ever held in my entire life. You could just tell it was a little bit heavier. It was like sturdier. And I just thought to myself, like, this is crazy. Like, I've never felt a can like this. And then the root beer was outrageous. It was delicious. It was really good. Yeah. But again, a lot of these things, if you find stuff from this era, they were stronger. You know, they were stronger, better in a bunch of different ways. And so over time, that's another example of shrinkflation. It's not that we're getting it's not even that the same thing costs the same amount. It's a worse version of the thing still costs way more.
We could do a show on like every single, like every item in a grocery store and what the impact has been on it. Like, this is such a random one, but we buy cases of a Costco bottled water. Hmm. Do you remember when they went from the old school, it was super thick. And then all of a sudden one day you go in there and it was after 2020. I'm almost sure that it was like they reduced the amount of plastic in each bottle by a half. And you like grab it and you literally can crush. Yeah. Like, if you have any sort of grip strength, you can just crush the bottle and like,
yeah.
I mean, they just reduced, because again, you know, plastic's an oil-based product. Yep. Oil prices went way up and they're trying to figure out a way to cut costs. They sent the, you know, the bean counters to figure out ways to cut corners and thinner, less material, anything they can do to try to hide the inflation.
Yeah. And again, and this is
like the $1.50 hot dog.
Yeah. Yep. We mentioned with the ground beef is, again, the temptation is to cut corners, right? This is, we read Gary North's book, Honest Money. And he talked about how this was something that happened all the time with wine. So as monetary debasement happened, the winemaker would be tempted to introduce a little bit of water into his wine in order to make it go farther and allow him to sell more of it and to make the same amount of profit that he was accustomed to making. And so again, it's this hidden tax that incentivizes you, that forces you basically to try to either be content with making less. Or in so doing tempts you to look for shortcuts in ways that are in order to protect yourself, it basically tempts you to choose your own good over the good of your neighbor and over, you know, the glory of God by loving your neighbor. And so this is a huge deal. And so this is kind of what we were getting at with the title. Again, is just looking at in reality, inflation. At least monetary inflation, it is this theft. It's plain and simple. They're never going to describe it in those terms because that will, people would freak out. But that's the reality of what they know what they're doing. They're stealing from you because they know that they're passive aggressive. They know if they were to basically ask you to, try to raise taxes here, we need to do this. We think it's going to cost more. We'll raise taxes. You wouldn't do it. And so this is just the reality. It's a passive aggressive way of getting the same result, without having to raise taxes and do something that would be unpopular politically. With this, they can obfuscate. They basically make up all kinds of reasons. They can blame it on their political predecessor. They can blame it on, whatever else they want to blame it on, anything other than the truth. Yeah. And so again, this is a huge deal. This has all kinds of downstream consequences. And it's unsustainable for the long term.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, when we had the big, I don't want to steal Lawrence Lepard's thing, but because I still think the big print is actually coming. But the COVID print, they printed seven or nine trillion? I can't remember which.
Yeah,
it was something like it was over $7 trillion of money and just dumped it out into the marketplace. I actually made a post locally in my community, and I was warning all the small businesses to pay really close attention to all their input costs for all the goods and services that they offer. Because what the Federal Reserve, what our government counts on, is they actually count on small businesses not paying attention and to not pass on those costs. So they print the massive amount of money. And if everyone in concert, if there was like some index that basically went out and all businesses just raised their prices 40%, all the politicians would be thrown out of office and we would have abolished the Federal Reserve decades ago.
Yeah.
But it never happens. And I'll give you an example. So I know that like hops cost, like to make beer, it went up significantly. I mean, I don't know.
Yep.
I'm not going to pull up the numbers, but like I went into one of our local breweries and I said, hey, you guys probably need, I know that your costs just went up significantly. You need to adjust your prices. And sure enough, like several, whatever it was within a month or so, they raised the price of each beer $1 because it wasn't just that their prices went up 20%. It was like 40, or it was very quickly. Anyways, all that to say, a lot of businesses and a lot of individuals, they just take it in the chin. They try as hard as they can not to raise prices because they don't want to hurt their customers and they don't want to seem greedy and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, the most loving thing to do is to raise your prices so you don't go out of business and you don't disappear. And sadly, if you look at all the businesses that went out over the last several years, a lot of them, it was just because they didn't adjust quickly enough.
Yep.
You have huge corporations like Starbucks, when their cost of milk goes up, it's like instantaneous. They're across the board, all the drink prices go up.
Yeah.
Because they're not just gonna take that hit. So
Again, as we mentioned, that's the best possible case scenario. The best case scenario is that the providers are honest enough where they say, hey, we can't continue to offer what we have been given these constraints, and so we're going to go out of business. Again, there's plenty of other ways that can go. They can choose to prioritize their own existence by staying in business, by you know, cheapening the materials. There's a fantastic video. Oh, I have to find it. It's basically, it's this video called Why the FDA Knowingly Approves of Dangerous Drugs. And it basically comes the, it make a lot, there's a number of different factors, but like they basically, they were making drugs in one place and then they basically started making them someplace else, making them in India. And they know categorically that a good percentage of these drugs are dangerous. And yet the cost, like both to their own reputation or whatever, to not having access to these drugs is such that they continue to approve. And like the video talks about a journalist who went through basically, there was a whistleblower working for the company. Then there was a journalist who, you know, who took that information and followed up. And basically they basically found there's a ton of corruption on the ground in India where, you know, they knew what was going on. They were cut into the profits. And so they basically just kind of pushed it under the rug. And then even on the side, the American journalist who's kind of doing this investigatory research, just basically he kind of talked about it with one of his employers, and there was some relationship between them and a media conglomerate to where they kind of pushed it under the rug too, like this regulatory body that was supposed to be providing accountability to these pharmaceutical companies. They're basically all in bed together. They're all just acting in such a way that is against the best interests of people. And then they even talked about to a further degree that the United States, we still get the best, not great drugs. There's plenty of other drugs that are, you know, basically that are shipped, the worst versions of these are sent to the poorest people on earth, people who can't afford to get the better stuff. And so the whole thing is just incredibly corrupt. And again, all of this is entirely predictable. One of my favorite sayings is that logic is a time machine. Like you can predict all of these things. You could have predicted all of them 20, 30 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, if you saw the baseline trajectory of doing some of these things. And so this is where, I mean, so this is why some of these things matter a ton. I think, Ryan, one of the things I want to do, I want to show this video that was put together by this son of some random guy I met one time. His name was Elijah Finley. He's like, yeah, we'll see. But he basically is working together with Marty on this series of videos. And they posted one the other day about the creation of the Federal Reserve that kind of talks about these things. I really feel like
I think this one might have been Ed.
It was. But still, he's working on these. But this will be.
Yeah, I just worked with him.
If you guys haven't seen this, this is, I mean, you kind of got to see it.
Yeah, it went viral.
Yeah.
That was really.
Millions of views. 2.1 million on
people are waking up. That was another reason why I wanted to talk about this today. Like it's getting difficult for them to hide it, and it's only going to get worse. So
yeah, here we go.
Jekyll Island, November 1910. Seven bankers meeting in secret to create America's central bank. We just can't call it that. The 1907 panic nearly destroyed us. Banks failed, fortunes vanished. We want to control America's money supply, create booms, trigger busts, and profit from both. And how will we do that? We'll create money from nothing, loan it to the government, and charge interest. Legal counterfeiting, my friends. But there's a cost. Every dollar we print steals value from existing dollars. It's a hidden tax that flows directly to us. And it gets worse. If we ever get off the gold standard, governments can print money for wars. Endless wars become possible. And profitable. Since Americans hate central banks, we'll call it the Federal Reserve. Sounds governmental, doesn't it? It's not. The president will appoint board members, but we'll pick who he appoints. We'll have 12 regional banks. Looks decentralized, democratic even. But New York banks control them all. That's us. You're probably wondering how we're going to get this through Congress. December 23rd, 1913. Most of Congress home for Christmas. Perfect timing for passing unpopular legislation. I'll publicly oppose our own bill in Congress. They'll pass it thinking they beat Wall Street. We'll fund university chairs, write the textbooks. They'll teach our system as economic science. Beautiful.
Every American born after this will inherit debt on money we created from nothing. Generational servitude. The Federal Reserve. Not federal, no reserves. But everyone will think it's their government protecting them.
Good afternoon.
Yeah. So again, this is what we're talking about. This is the source of a lot of these things is, again, that because governments can print money out of thin air, again, they're going to continue to do it because it gives them power, because it gives them control, and because they can make themselves a ton of money in the short term. Again, a lot of these things are presented as if they're in our interest, when in reality, they're in the interest of a very small group of people who you know, benefit both personally and professionally.
Yeah. And where this is going, like why we sound a little bit arrogant talking about, you know, how, predicting the future. Look at our debt. Look at the national debt. Look at the interest expense on the debt. And then look at the unfunded liabilities that the U.S. government has. And it's I don't know, it's over $100 trillion of unfunded liabilities. It's an astronomical amount of money. And yeah, at the end of the day, they're not going to default on that debt.
Yeah.
They're going to pay it. It's just they're going to pay it in newly printed money. And so it's going to continually debase everyone's money. And yeah, so we can expect higher inflation every year from here on out.
And this is one of the things to that point about us being arrogant about, you know, talking about these things, talking confidently about these things. I understand that objection to a certain degree because there's verses that talk about, oh, you know, who are you? You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's like, okay, great. Yeah. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. That is true to a point. At the same time, you see King David, right? When King David, he's starting to lament and get discouraged when he thinks about the prosperity of the wicked. And then I can't remember which psalm this is, but at the end, he draws consolation from the fact that he remembers their end. Okay, he remembers that you can only deny sowing and reaping for so long until the chickens come home to roost. And so like we're just basically talking about like what we're describing is, listen, you can deny reality for so long, but you can't do it forever. It's going to collapse. And again, actions have consequences. There's consequences to the things that they're doing. And again, this isn't the first time this has happened. This has happened in numerous countries all over the world. And we can see, patterns emerging that basically demonstrate this reality and where this is going. Let's see. Here's another. We have another one from Lynn Alden here. Let's do this one. Lynn Alden. Here we go. If supply chain disruptions were the main driver of price inflation rather than the growth of the money supply, then aggregate prices should go back down to their pre-COVID baseline rather than remain at a permanent higher plateau and above trend. So this is, consumer price index for all consumers. It just continues to go up. There is no real going down.
That was in the middle of, so that was back in 2023, right? When she wrote that. That was... first, it was Putin price hike, according to Biden. That's why the prices were blowing up, not the 40% increase in the money supply. It was Putin. And then it was the COVID price shock or whatever it was. I can't remember the terminology, but there were several excuses during that little period that they blamed it all on. Greedy grocery store owners. That was also. So I think those were the top three. Sadly, too many people just watch the news and they accept, it was this. And then they turn around, oh, that's a bummer.
And again, the thing that just drives me nuts is just, again, show me your incentives. Like, look at the incentives. Like, governments are incentivized to, like, it just, and we've seen this, everyone could give because we've had Trump and Biden, okay? Everyone can pick their examples. They can cherry pick their examples. Politicians lie to your face. They lie directly to your face over and over and over again to try to protect themselves to suit their own interests. And so a lot of this is happening in all these places. If you tell people something that whoever the president is doesn't want to hear, they'll fire you and they'll find somebody else to parrot the words that they want you to say. This is the reality everywhere. I was listening to the podcast that Marty Bent, friend of the program, recorded with David Collum and Rudy Havenstein, who is Haverstein? I can't remember which one it is. Havenstein, I think.
Havenstein.
Just a glorious interview. Well done. And they just talk about, at one point, I can't remember if it was Dave or Rudy, basically asked, when was the last time that a powerful person actually went to jail? Like really, there really had consequences for their actions. When was the last time that happened? And basically they came out and said that it was like Ken Lay back when Enron happened. And so this basically talking about, hey, yeah, he kind of reached the end of his usefulness. You know, the whole thing actually blew up. It was going to be difficult for him to come back. They were saying he was the largest political donor to George W. Bush. So again, conceivably had a lot of political cachet that didn't help him. But again, since then, they were just trying to think like who really gets caught? Who really gets caught and gets the bit out of them? Nobody. And that includes, I mean, you could argue Epstein. You can argue that he died if you think he died. But then you have somebody like, they're literally talking about releasing Ghislaine Maxwell. Like,
yeah, didn't they already moved? I think I saw.
Yeah.
Didn't they today or something?
Yeah, it was just the last couple of days. They moved her to like a swankier prison, basically, and are considering, like, they're considering pardoning her. They're considering pardoning Diddy. Like P. Diddy for all the, like, it is absurd. Like, I mean, just the brazenness of the corruption that we're seeing is bonkers. It is crazy. And again, you're going to get the point. There's one of these tweets. Let me see if I can find it. It basically talks about how, let me see if I can find it. It talks about how these things usually end with pitchforks. I can't think of where it is. Basically, that was kind of the idea. Just basically, these things don't end well. They don't like happily reverse. It's like, no, these end, a lot of revolutions happen because of currency devaluation. You can observe this, look at the history and observe it.
Yeah, it's yeah. I mean, the little saying by, I think it was Henry Ford, he famously said that if people knew what was going on in the financial system, they would revolt in the streets the next day.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and that was like 100, that was over 100 years ago.
Yep.
120 years ago that this has been going on. And yeah.
But Ryan, we're so much smarter now. We're so much better now, you know? Like it's what C.S. Lewis called chronological snobbery, basically, that like we're smarter, we're better now than people were 100 years ago or a few hundred years. It's like nothing changes.
Like, it's almost as if there's consequences to allowing the government to educate all of our kids, because in general, I would say the majority of kids, you know, educated by the government don't question things very much. Like, you know what I mean? They're just trusting that the government is always looking out for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's another example. This is from the aforementioned column, Dave column. I got this from Rudy Havenstein's Substack. It captures my frustration. Do not show me a plot that goes back just a few years. Do not show me a plot without inflation correction. Do not bother to show me some technical jargon. Show me the history. So there's this image. When I see housing charts that only go back 10 years, it's like, guys, come on. Like, this is one of these, you have to be smarter than this. You have to be smarter than the data. You have to question the data that you're being presented. You have to ask, why am I being shown this?
Why? We need wisdom. Like, we need to be able to back out and just think about the technological progress and innovation that's been made over the last like 150 years.
Yep.
And we're at the most unaffordable, like, housing's the most unaffordable it's ever been in history in 2025.
Yeah.
So like, not like all the innovation, all the progress has all been wiped out and stolen. Like, it should be cheaper and like that at any time in history to produce a house for someone to, like, shelter over a person's head so that they can live. And in fact, we've made it the most expensive in history. That's absolutely insane. And when you think about what we're capable of doing, and then yet somehow you're just like, how? Like, it's obviously, it's not just the monetary debasement. The monetary debasement is a huge component of it. Broken government taking bribes. Like, I mean, there's obviously other things that are contributing to it, but yeah, it's kind of breathtaking when you really sit back and think, how in the world are we at this place?
Now, Ryan, we've talked a lot about food in this episode, so maybe some people are home. They're sitting there going, "Well, hey, you know, you're just talking about food. Like, it's really bad when it comes to food. But I mean, listen, probably everything else is still great, right?" No, that's not how that works. Here we go, Charlie Bilello. Price increases over the last 5 years. This is as of today. Price increases over the last 5 years. CPI on new cars. This is, again, the official numbers. This is the official numbers on these things, which actually everyone acknowledges aren't real. CPI on new cars, 21%. Okay. So you're talking 4% a year at least. Or no, what is that? Yeah. 5 times 4. Yeah. So 4%, that's, everyone knows that's not right. But family health insurance, 24%. So 6% a year there. CPI food at home, 24%. CPI shelter, almost 28%. CPI food away from home, 30%. Used cars are up 32.9%. CPI electricity, 30, almost 38%. Transportation, 43.4%. Gasoline, 43.9%. Home prices, 51.6%. Gas utilities, 56.1%. Fuel oil, 57.7%. Auto insurance, 60.5%, and a dozen eggs. Now, again, this is where there's more. This is more to do with, like, in addition to the CPI.
Bird flu.
Yeah, exactly. More situational stuff. But a dozen eggs is up 150%, 157%. So, again, this is broad. This is happening everywhere. This isn't just something you can just isolate and point to. Oh, this is just because, you know, there was a bird flu in the Midwest. Like, it's just not that. Like, there's something more systemic going on, and it's not sustainable. Let's see here. We've got this one as well from Peter Schmidt. Oh, go ahead.
Oh no, yeah, it's just interesting. I just noticed that the things that are hard to print are the highest.
Correct. Yep.
Fuel, gas, home prices.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, obviously the home prices also, there's some external factors going into that too, but, yeah.
Definitely. Here we go. So this is from Peter Schmidt at the 92ers, courtesy of a recent Substack post by the aforementioned Rudy Havenstein, insights from the Raven of Zurich. State bankruptcy is a one-time surgical intervention, while inflation is a permanent poisoning of the very bloodstream of a society. He was correct again. So this is like, is it leukemia? It's like when you have cancer in your blood.
We're pretty sure.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. So like, yeah, this is effectively leukemia. We're going going through, monetary leukemia. We're just kind of being killed a little bit at a time. So these are adult milestones. So from in 1983, over 80% of people, 80% of 30-year-olds were living on their own. Now in 2023, we're down to, about 63%. 30-year-olds in 1983 who had been married, that we were almost at 80%. Now we're down to, somewhere in the 40%. Live with a child, that was at 60, a little bit under 60% in 1983, and now is right down near 30%. And then own their own home, it was about 50% in 1983. And it's closer to 30% in 2023. So again, you have like this basic, infantilization of the people. We're like delayed adolescence is what you're experiencing. You're seeing more and more of this. We experienced this when we were in Uruguay. We were living in Uruguay for a number of years. It was totally common because of these same dynamics to live with your parents until you're around 40. Late, like 30s, 40s, totally normal. And then, people would get married later. They'd have kids later. You'd have kids in your late 30s, early 40s. And that was just totally, totally a normal thing because of, the fact that it's so expensive to kind of get life underneath of your feet where you can afford to live it on your own without needing to rely on your parents.
Yeah. These charts should be a huge signal, like that there's an enormous amount of sickness in our country.
Yep.
Like that's not, those aren't charts of health.
Yep.
And they're just getting worse. At the end of the day, it kills optimism. Like people are, you look at that and like, which one of those looks like it's going to be better next year? And it's like, no, the answer is none of them. The same thing with our financial picture. It's really frustrating. And yet are our leaders talking about actually solving these issues, and they're not. I mean, we had Musk give it a Hail Mary, effort through DOGE to try to trim just a little bit of the fat off of government. Half the, like at least half the country revolted. And here, I'm going to be fair here, neither the Republicans or Democrats have an, politicians have an appetite for any sort of cuts. Like, there's the, I don't know, any cut to any government program in a politician's own district, they'll silently go and try to lobby to get it to stay. That's the reality. Like, nobody want, neither side. And so that's why it, I mean, effectively, it was all for nothing. And the budget's going to be completely blown out. I think we'll be over $2 trillion deficit for the year. I think that's what we're on pace for.
Yep.
Just going to be worse. It will be worse next year. So it's, yeah, I think we're at the terminal stage. Like, it's, everyone's basically just giving up on fixing this.
Yeah. It's because, like, I mean, realistically, there's, I mean, you can't get away from the black hole. Like, we're at the point where you're being sucked into the black hole. Even, I mean, we've talked about this before, but we're at the point where this year the interest on the debt surpassed the military budget.
Defense budget.
It's just like, I mean, we're just so out of touch with reality. You can't even imagine. And again, like the measures that are being talked about are just too little, too late. I mean, like the one that was actually interesting was the, you know, trying to buy Bitcoin to pay down the debt. Again, it still is possible. There's still, I mean, you had Bessent today, Scott Bessent, who just, what did he get moved to? He was the Treasury Secretary, and now they made him something else.
I don't know.
I can't remember. It was like they announced it yesterday or something. Yesterday or the day before or something. But yeah, I mean, he certainly is aware of these things. He's, you know, values Bitcoin, says it's one of the most important things in the world today. And so again, he seems like he has his eye on it, but you know, whether or not they're going to actually do it and follow through on that, especially once it gets beyond the Trump administration, I mean, that's something that is, you know, yet to be seen. But and then even if it did, let's say, I mean, the crazy thing is, like, what if Bitcoin does go to $1 million? Do you think for a second that the United States is just going to sell it in order to pay down their debt? Like, I don't have any expectation, because at that point, if it becomes like this strategic and, you know, strategic instrument, like, then they're just going to hold on to it forever. And, you know, I don't know, like take out loans again or something crazy. Like, they're just the
dollar is doomed.
Yeah,
how long it lasts? I mean, we're going to still use it for, I don't know. It always takes longer for things to come home to roost.
Yeah,
you know, I think we've heard a lot of people talk, like, people will, like, any country that has really, really high inflation, they still use that, you know, their country's native currency, but they won't save in it. They'll save in anything but the currency.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think the U.S. is probably it's going to be something similar to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it is doomed, I'll predict that we do some sort of transition that involves Bitcoin at some point. I think it would be in our best interest. I think more Americans own Bitcoin now than gold.
Yep,
and that's only increasing. So, we have all the incentives for the U.S. to encourage Bitcoin to be like a national savings instrument.
Yeah.
You know, as our dollar collapses in the years and decades ahead.
Yeah.
So we don't totally get wiped out.
Yeah. I'm just like waiting. I'm waiting to see which state is going to be the first one to buy Bitcoin for their citizens. Like, I'm like waiting for that kind of thing. Like, when is that going to happen? Who's it going to be? Is it going to be a country first? Because again, there's certain things where there's a first mover advantage. Right. And again, the reason this matters, if you're a Christian, you're trying to understand this, think about it like the logic of repentance. Okay. So Jesus comes, okay, and he sends John the Baptist as his forerunner. And so John starts going before him and starts declaring the need for people to repent. Hey, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Like, boom, like this reckoning is coming. You like, stop. It's not time for games. Stop playing games. In prepare, because like God he's getting ready to send the Messiah who's going to, you know, judge the world in righteousness. And so you start to see people who like repent and they start to stop playing games. They start to doing these things. And it's something very, again, not to compare the seriousness of these things, but there's something very similar with, you know, with Bitcoin. Like, this fiat currencies are a delusion. The idea that this piece of, same piece of paper, we can write 100 on it and it's worth 100 times more. Like, it's a total shell game. It's a total emperor's new clothes thing. Everybody knows this. If you think about this for 5 minutes, we've just all been gaslit into thinking that it's normal. It's not. It never will be. And so the first person who wakes up and first, you know, the first people, this is why the first people who adopted Bitcoin 15 years ago are billionaires now. People who have adopted it after that continue to be wealthy. And you're going to, like, this is going to click with certain countries. It's already clicked with El Salvador. It's starting to click with the United States. But the first ones to really get and see the hopelessness of the fiat system and to turn on the money printers in order to buy Bitcoin, those are going to be the ones where you're going to, like, those are going to be the ones who are going to benefit to a disproportionate degree. And so it's just super interesting to think about who is going to do that. You know, yeah. At what point is it going to happen? I think we could still be far away from it. But again, if you told me that if you told me that some Middle Eastern country, if you told me that, the difficulty with something like Russia or China is they don't like Bitcoin because it's outside of their control. And then they also extraordinarily value things like gold and, basically gold, because they can mine it, they can find it, they can purchase it, they value it. But at some point in the near future, you're going to have countries who recognize, wait a second, we recognize that this is super valuable. And you're telling me that we can take this stranded energy that we have all this excess energy that is just literally being wasted, and we can mine Bitcoin with this, or, you know, we can just utilize our printers in order to buy this scarce asset that they're eventually will run, you know, they'll run out of some for sale, and basically the price of it will go through the roof. Like, people will wake up to that calculus. Individuals are already doing it. Businesses are already doing it. But it really is going to get wild once nations start getting to that point.
Yeah. I wonder if the incentives.
I'm muted.
Am I? Can you hear me?
Well, we're right here at the audio episode anyhow. So Ryan, I'll greet everyone for Ryan. Thank you guys for tuning into another episode of the To the Unknown Pod, episode 25 in the books. We look forward to seeing you later this week on Thursday for another episode. So we are grateful for you guys. Again, what do we do about these things? You go buy Bitcoin. That's what we do with these things. What do we do? How can you, what do we do about a currency that is being printed ad absurdum? You go and take money and buy something that can't be printed. So go buy Bitcoin. Go understand Bitcoin more. Share these links, videos with people in your lives in as non-annoying of a way as possible. And we'll see you on the next episode of To the Unknown Pod.